You thought it would be different this time, and it was, because it was in April. Motorsport 101, yokoso!
See, you can't accuse us on Motorsport 101 of not being cultured. We are a diverse show in every sense. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 508 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. And as the song famously once said, we're going Japanese this edition. And for the second time in just 7 months, we have the Japanese Grand Prix to talk about here on M101. And, well, did you enjoy your break from Red Bull-related dominance for a couple of weeks? It was fun, wasn't it? It was a good time.
I can't believe it. After 3 whole weeks, Max Verstappen finished the story. Whoa, man. Well, before we get into this, like, we had a lot of, like, non-motorsport stuff that we were locked into over the weekend, over the past couple of weeks even. For one, college basketball happened. The women's game is going great because the women are getting roasted like all the men were for simply not being good enough to cover the best players in the game. Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes did not win. Coach Dawn Staley, South Carolina Gamecocks did in the national title game. Also, UConn won the men's title, but that's small potatoes.
That's neither here nor there. No one cares about the men's side of things. Caitlin Clark is her. Like, this was the first time I'd ever watched the women's side of March Madness, or any March Madness basketball in general. Caitlin Clark is so much fun. My God. They don't make him like that no more.
This is a generational, like, run of, like, this is a generational defining tournament. Like, every match from, like, the quarterfinals onward when we got to Iowa versus LSU, the crutch match, was fun and must-see television. Ultimately, in the end, South Carolina won because they were a better composed team with better defensive components. And eventually, Caitlin Clark became the LeBron James no help meme.
Very, very much
Bugatti
so.
In the Shaq, if you will.
No, it wasn't Bugatti in the Shaq. Like that.
It was a little bit of the Bugatti in the Shaq.
LeBron on the Cavs in 2018 was definitely that was the Bugatti in like the vacant lot.
Oh, 100%.
This is the Bugatti in the house that should be condemned to be torn down, but yet is still on the market because we know somebody is going to knock it down and flip it for like 5 times its listed property value.
Brian Griffin when he gets his teeth fixed.
Oh, yeah. Very, very much so. Yeah, mad fun to watch. Nearly 19 million people watched that women's tournament final, the most watched basketball game of any kind in the United States for 5 years, which is incredible. Women's sport belongs. It has a seat on the table in North America. It's not a very big one. It should be bigger, but it's something, and that is awesome.
Hell yeah. We love that.
Absolutely. I mean, they were put, like, I thought the rematch in the quarterfinals between Iowa and LSU was going to be the tournament topper, but it ended up going more and more beyond that as the tournament went on. And as much as Iowa didn't get to finish their story, I'm also kind of low-key glad, even as a part-time wrestling fan, that Cody Rhodes got to finish his. So that
was
pretty cool.
Yeah, that transitioned nicely into WrestleMania 40, which I've heard from people who are more dialed in than we are, that it was generally pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not the biggest fan of the two-night format these days because they have to get so many people onto a card over a weekend. But
I get it. By the time they ran, like, 2019 WrestleMania in New York, New Jersey, I think it was getting to the point that it was just like, if we keep doing one-night WrestleManias, we're going to be here for 7 freaking hours, man.
Yeah, I do get it. I do get it in that sense. There was a lot of cool stuff on that card, you know, just in general. I mean, again, I'm only a part-time wrestling watcher these days at best, but it's just a couple of notes. Damian Priest getting to cash in on Drew McIntyre after Punk out-trolled him was brilliant cinema. That was awesome. Loved that. In general, Sami Zayn breaking out the top rope brainbuster on Gunther to end his 660.
People thought Sami Zayn botched the move because they have never seen Sami Zayn do a top rope. I mean, he has never done one. There was this Canadian masked wrestler named El Generico who was popular on the indies, but he's since retired and now works in an orphanage. Maybe he'll come back sometime. Who knows? But Sami Zayn, of course, paying tribute to that totally distinct wrestler.
Yep. It was a great tribute, if I do say so myself. Good for Gunther as well for having that incredible two-year-long reign single-handedly put the Intercontinental title back on the map. He's an incredible talent, and I hope it leads to a main event level push because that's what he deserves, quite frankly. And of course, how can we not talk about that main event and the incredible long-term storytelling, the incredible cameos, and it just felt like I was watching the 90s again. It was so cool. Like, yeah. John Cena coming out and running house, the Rock coming out.
John Cena not being afraid to, like, turn away from the hard cam so that his ever-growing bald spot, because he is terrifyingly approaching 50 years old, is just, like, visible for all the world to see. And then Undertaker rolling up for at least one more WrestleMania cameo, like he just rolled out of bed.
Oh, yeah. Full tracksuit. Like he's literally just chilling in his sweatpants on a Saturday afternoon, is in the middle of a WrestleMania ring to choke slam The Rock like it's 2001 again.
By the way, like The Rock was just like, we're going to have time before we're inevitably completely disappointed with Dwayne The Rock Johnson before he inevitably runs as the Republican candidate for U.S. president. But like he's doing some of his best stuff on the microphone in a hot minute. Like,
it's fun.
Final Boss Rock is pretty fun. And, I heard that, like, he did not, like, totally embarrass himself in what might be his last match.
No, he was great. I'll give him this. He put in the hard work. He trained. He got his cardio going. And he did very, very well on the night one main to set up that Bloodline Rules match in the main event. So props to Dwayne. I know he's 6'2 and 270 pounds of raw muscle, but he could still move it a little bit. So fair play to him on that regard. And of course, congrats to Cody Rhodes for finishing the story and quite possibly the greatest long-term wrestling story ever told. It's just nice that professional wrestling, at least for a week, feels cool again.
Which is something that it hasn't
felt like in years to me.
We have a new, it's not really Monday Night Wars, it's like Weekday Wars between WWE and AEW, and like the rivalry between them just doesn't seem as cool as it did back in the day when we were both small children. It was WWF versus WCW. We didn't have social media. We didn't have like the worst points of discourses being made about both. But it does feel like things are on the up and up for a company that was very much in the shit for good reasons. And now things seem to be turning around. Morale seems to be improving. It's nice what happens when things happen and you just realize you've gotten rid of things that were holding people back. Obviously, I wouldn't rule out, there may be a slump down the road. Maybe everybody turns on Cody Rhodes as quickly as they got behind him. But for now, WrestleMania 40 was pretty cool.
It was indeed. Very cool indeed.
Solar eclipse.
Yeah, solar eclipse too.
Yeah, it's a sign of the apocalypse where I live.
I mean, Cam, if I wanted to watch the sun disappear, I'd just go back and watch Phoenix's last NBA Finals run.
That's kind of what it felt like the whole world was ending for that part of the country.
Chris Paul hits a huge three to cut the lead down to 37.
Beautiful, beautiful. You've been listening to the dulcet tones of RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley, of course, my beloved co-hosts on this show. And yes, we're now going to talk about the Japanese Grand Prix in just a moment. But first, the places you can find us and some general housekeeping. Motorsport 101 is our website, motorsport101.com, if you want to follow us on there, including some extra post-race thoughts from yours truly, reviewing that blog. There's not too much going on over there. I mean, it's a pretty quiet April, motorsport-wise in general, to be honest. It's kind of weird for us these days, but here we are. So you can check that out if you haven't already. You can follow us on Elon Musk's failed business investment, now with 100% more bots, at DreHarrison101, at CBuckley917, and at RJO.
Podcast in bio.
I don't understand. I thought the bots were done and that all this new traffic is just organic humans, real humans.
I don't know. I've just never been so popular to women, apparently. Who knew? Wait, they're not real? Shit. Okay. In the meantime, I'll leave that one up in the air. Gloria, I know you're listening. That was a joke, I promise.
we love you, Gloria. Gloria's been great putting our podcast highlights out on socials. Like,
yeah. In fact, this is probably going to be one.
Oh dear. We're breaking the fourth wall a little bit here, and this time no bad comics are burning. But if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. I may need it now for all those virtual goals or from links I need to take care of the bills with. That's patreon.com/motorsport101. You can back us at the $5 level to get early access to all of our shows, or you can back us at the $10 level to also get supporters club access and the ability to listen to these shows live as they are being recorded, as Jason is doing right now. So thanks, Jason, for listening in as ever. So without further ado, let's get into the 2024 Japanese Grand Prix.
Normal service has resumed. Max Verstappen dominated the Japanese Grand Prix with this from his fifth consecutive pole position. And got the hat trick, won from pole, had the fastest lap, comfortable double-digit second win over his teammate Sergio Perez in second, and Carlos Sainz Jr., the hottest free agent in the sport, keeping his 100% podium streak on the season in third. Gentlemen, what did you make of the battle at the front of the field? Well, not the very front. I mean,
It was a great battle for third.
Gilles Villeneuve renting our new type beat.
Yeah.
Pretty much, because early in the weekend, there was talk of Leclerc's long run pace, which, as we saw on his very well executed one stop, wasn't completely unfounded. You thought it would be different this time.
Simple as that, really.
Yeah, they won actually by a larger margin than they did last year at this race, which I didn't realize until I actually looked it up from last year. Doesn't look that big by modern standards from Red Bull, but then it wouldn't with Red Bull basically, A, lifting off through multiple corners, including 130R for about two-thirds of the race, and having their ERS turned down basically into idle mode, to the point that they were the slowest cars on average in the speed trap for most of the race. It didn't matter.
The Japanese for did you think it would be different this time is Konkai wa chigau to omotta.
Again, we're breaking new cultural ground on this show. I love it. The terrifying stat that I dug up after that race was over was the one where in recent runs. Going back looking through the archives and on Wikipedia, this was Max Verstappen's 41st win in the last 54 Grand Prix. Now, there's a reason why I picked out the number 41. For those who were big F1 fans, you may associate that number with the number of career wins that Ayrton Senna had in his legendary F1 career. Senna, the man who many still think is the greatest F1 driver of all time. Max has now won as many Grand Prix as Ayrton did in his last 54 starts.
Ayrton had 160-something starts in a fatality-shortened career that spanned 10 seasons and change.
Yeah, so going back to the middle of 2021, I want to say that was, towards the back end. I think the first one in that 41 was when he won at COTA in 21, that epic, you know, tense one between him and Hamilton. Since then, he's won 41 of the last 54. I'm trying really hard to find new ways of spinning just how brilliant this man is, and it's just even I'm struggling. And you know me, I love a good stat, but he's wild. He's just inevitable. He had to deal with a double restart as well because we had a red flag early doors. We'll talk more about that a little bit more towards the back end of the show. But it's getting to the point where if Max gets a clean run at the start of the race, he wins. It's that simple at this point.
It's been that simple. It's been that simple for, you know, better part of a year now.
It has been demonstrated that the only thing that will stop him is his brakes literally turning into an erupting volcano like Pierce Brosnan in Dante's Peak style.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, like, and don't get me wrong, this is not to discount Ferrari's progress, because they've just about cut that gap in half to last year. Yeah, last Ferrari... year, Charles Leclerc finished near as enough 44 seconds off the win. The problem is that cutting that gap in half has only got them as close as McLaren were here last season.
Mm. Ferrari got better. They are getting closer to not being the perennial bag fumblers that we know them to be.
Right, now they're just the perennial second place, the definitive second quickest car in F1.
Well, what I will say to that is that it's actually genuinely refreshing to see Ferrari not haunt this up. They actually did very well in a very strategic race to recover from not a particularly great set of qualifying results, and ended up third and fourth. Like, Charles Leclerc, by the way, one of the drivers of the season so far for me. I'm actually genuinely really glad the fans recognized just how good Charles Leclerc's drive was and made him driver of the day. I'm actually impressed that F1's audience had the nuance to pick that one out, because the way he drove that one stopper, which wasn't even on the table with Pirelli when they were talking about race strategy. And yeah, it wasn't the most optimal strategy out there, but he made it work and finished fourth. Outstanding drive from Charles Leclerc. It's a reminder that man is still him. My goodness. Really, really impressive stuff from Charles Leclerc. I had to get that one in. I had to. It was just too good not to mention, in my opinion. That was a really, really impressive bit of work.
I hear you.
Yeah, it's just this. You know what's even more wacky about this is that Sergio Perez is holding up his end of the deal as well. He's driving really well. Yeah. He was comfortably second.
Three of the four weekends, he has been doing exactly what he needs to do to retain his drive for next year, because you're never going to expect him to beat Max. All he has to do is just follow him home, and he's holding up his end of the bargain. And to that effect, neither Red Bull were particularly challenged at any point this race. They probably won this at 75-80% tilt.
Yeah. And hey, to give Checo another mention, his qualifying was really, really good. It was only 0.07 off Max in qualifying, and given he was 0.7 back at this same Grand Prix last year, that's a big step up. It looks like they found something with Checo this year that's made him a bit more comfortable in the car, because he's driving a lot better than he was relative to last year, which is good. You know, if they keep this up, Red Bull's eliminated their arguable one weakness, and that was Checo leaving the door open to maybe slot in between them in that pecking order. If Perez has slammed that door shut, then it's going to be a long 2 years, boy.
you know who was really having the best time? Did you see that meme going around where it's just like, it's a meme of two people having a sit down interview, and one of them is asking the Japanese fans, so what do you prefer, driver or team? And the Japanese fan says, engine. And if your favorite engine is Honda, buddy, this was a great...
You were eating great.
You were eating nothing but the finest cut of Wagyu beef. Mm-hmm. You were eating just the most savory tonkatsu ramen. Mm. You were having like the best katsu. Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. God, now I'm hungry, and I just had lunch before we started recording.
Way to go, gang. Way to go. But no... Cam was the one who worked out that it looked like Red Bull was dialing this down, and they still won Japan, one of the most technical and difficult tracks on the calendar, at a canter. That is a terrifying thought, because China's next, and China's another quite technical, quite highly strung track, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more next week, but bit of a scary sign on that one. We got some catch up to do in the midfield as well a little bit here, which is interesting, because it's time for another one I like to call my midfield reports. RJ, your man's Fernando Alonso was claiming that sixth place he had was one of the best drives of his career, certainly in the top five. I want to talk about this for you for a second here. It's like, is Fernando being that guy again, RJ? You know what I mean.
We've turned back the clock 10 years, and him finishing sixth in the F14T is one of the best drives of his career.
Yeah. It used to be like any time he finished fifth in an upper midfield car is like the best drive that he's ever had. Fernando Alonso is good for a P5, or in this case, P6. you know, he is absolutely thinking like, if I keep driving like this, maybe there is a chance that I have one more top tier factory drive left in me.
Well, it's a shame that the only factory with a opening seat next year is no longer top tier.
Oh, brother. Yeah, it's weird going through like a list of like a midfield report, and we have to talk about Mercedes because they only managed 7th and 9th between Russell and Hamilton. And this was after Hamilton willingly played the team game to let Russell go and chase the carrot. And it didn't really benefit either. I mean, points are points. You take those. But like your Mercedes.
Do you realize that points are points? You take those. About Mercedes, Petronas, Mercedes. Formula One team.
Yeah, yeah. After the big year 2012, which was more than a decade ago.
We really have turned Japanese driver in the points, Red Bull dominating the race, and Mercedes kind of sucking in the midfield.
Yeah, it really is, because this was the last time Mercedes were this bad, 2012. If they're the number four team on paper, which it looks like they are, the last time... You reckon Aston Martin's better than them now, too? Or is that just Fernando propping that up?
With one driver, sure. It's not their other driver.
I'd argue, how good a team are you with Lance Stroll as your floor? The guy that didn't even get out of Q1 on Saturday.
How good a car do you have if Lewis Hamilton is scraping 2 points with it?
To be fair, he had front wing damage. Leclerc tagged him on the opening lap.
Was he going to beat... Was he going to do much better? Because he basically... they finished in a wad between Russell, Piastri, who got put on a pretty piss-poor strategy mid-race.
Yeah, and he made a mistake as well, cutting the corner a couple of times, too.
He did. Well, he did get bonked. He got bonked off on one of those.
Yeah, one of them wasn't his fault, but no, I can't... I wouldn't go as far as to say they're the number five team in F1 right now, but they are certainly, in my opinion, fourth. And even if they were, that's still their worst year since 2012.
I think Aston has a definitively better car, but they've got one driver because Lance Stroll is... It's weird. Lance Stroll will have one weekend where he won't suck, and then a dozen where he will, and then one more weekend where he doesn't suck.
This is the thing. Like, the talent is resting there. The problem has always been that he has never been consistent enough to find it.
Bounced in Q1, my man.
Yeah. That's the thing. It goes back to that, you know, he's not able to consistently find it.
And he was really good in Australia. I thought that was a really solid drive for him in Australia there to get back into the top eight like that. And again, 1 week later, he's stinking up the joint on Japan, was given a beneficial strategy to try and get him back in the points towards the back end of that Australia race. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, she just ends up struggling. It was terrible.
I was going to address this with Mercedes, though. You know, back in 2009, in a famously not very good car, the MP424, Martin Whitmarsh, remember that guy?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Described the 24 as missing about, I think it was over 30 points of downforce relative to the cars around them. Mercedes, in their simulator, found 70 compared to last year, and yet the car is no quicker in the corners. They are missing 70 points of downforce worth of performance compared to what their simulator is saying and what real life is doing. Is that good?
How are we still talking about Mercedes having simulator calibration problems 3 years after they first reported it?
Yeah, and remember, like, this is not just because, oh, they put Mick Schumacher into the simulator role. No, this has been an ongoing thing for quite some time. And, like, I mean, damn, you're Mercedes AMG. You are the powerhouse of the 20... How could you not afford better simulators?
Well, I think it puts into perspective how important the pain that Red Bull took in 2019 and 2020 was, because they had to go through and basically rebuild their entire simulation and correlation pipeline. And they had the scar tissue to prove it. They got blown out of the water in 2020 because the car in high speed could compete with the W11, and at low speed was trying to kill both of its drivers. And Max could handle that most of the time and other times didn't. And Alex Albon was chewed up and spat out of that team.
And before that, Pierre Gasly was. And before that, Daniel Ricciardo decided I didn't want to be the second man at Red Bull.
Well, Red Bull has reaped the rewards of the rebuild of their simulator because everything they put on the track performs how it does in the simulator. And they can focus on making their car better. And Mercedes, well, the first one, they had to cut 90 points off of downforce of the zero pod car. Otherwise, it would bounce. And then last year's car had no downforce. And now this year's car has downforce in the simulator, but doesn't have any in real life.
Driver in the loop simulators have got to be one of the craziest innovations of our time. And you don't need a wind tunnel to see it.
I think they need a wind tunnel. I think they need eyes to see it. I think they need infrared cameras to see it.
Yeah.
Immersion locked in for years.
You know, they could even hire someone who just left one of the teams they're fighting with and see where it gets them.
Oh, McLaren. You mean the team that before this weekend had started had to admit that they had let David Sanchez go after just 3 years or 3 months on the job?
Yeah, I don't get this one. Does it basically just boil down to they hired a guy to bring him in and then it turns out like we have no role for him? We're letting you go.
That's kind of the impression. I mean, that's low-key what both Andrea Stella, who, to be fair, I like Stella. He's pretty honest and open.
Yeah,
he's one of the
team
bosses. He's a great team principal, and I admire the fact he's generally pretty honest. He's not playing any of that political bullshit for the most part. He's pretty straight shooting. And he said, look, we have no role for him. And we thought, well, it's better we let him go now and so he can find another team to work for rather than just sit there and have a very expensive, very talented man sit around and do nothing. If anything, it's probably the honorable thing to do as a company and to do right by the person and let him go. But it is, I do wonder how much of this was the technical reshuffle of last year when they let James Key go after Saudi Arabia and they had this new three-pronged approach to their car development with Peter Prodromou, and you know, he was moved over one side, and then this new triple path of aerodynamics development and whatnot. And now they brought in a guy who designed a pretty good Ferrari back in the day, you know, a competitive package, certainly. And they've realized they just didn't need him because they've already spent all this big money on people like Rob Marshall, who they got from Red Bull. It seems like Zach overkicked his coverage, not for the first time anyway.
Well, because he was brought in later because he was brought in to replace Key in one of those three roles.
And he had to sit for a year of gardening leave because he couldn't join them till January 1st.
It almost seems to me like, and forgive me for shoehorning another wrestling in, that David Sanchez basically became what Andrade El Idolo is now. Where he gets fired, he gets let go from WWE because they have no role for him. So he goes to AEW where they have no role for him. So he goes back to WWE where they have no role for him.
Well, because I have the statement up. While the role we envisioned and had agreed to was not aligned with the reality of the position I found.
That says to me creative has nothing for you. I think their reshuffle of last year had already kind of made Sanchez's role redundant. That's the impression that I get. I could be wrong, but that's certainly what it comes across like. Because you've already made other big key signings. You've already made big power moves in that year trying to bridge that gap because your car was cheeks at the first half of 2023. Again, I could be wrong, but that's the impression that this gives me. Like, that's what it's serving to me right now. In any case, because I wonder if there's more to it, because I don't know if it was just coincidence that Emanuele Pirro left as well as head of their driver academy in the same round of the same week of news about potential cuts happening. So I do wonder if that was also related or whether it was just a coincidence. But Zach, is everything okay at home? Just asking for a friend.
Yeah, he just continues to write checks that his ass can't cash.
I mean,
whatever it takes, RJ.
I don't know what's left in the McLaren Young Driver program these days. I will be real, other than like, God, who is actually other than Luca Badoer's son, Brando,
Gabriel Bortoleto is probably their big one now, but even then, what's the point when both of their drivers are tied down till 2026?
Yeah, we basically, okay, so it's, this list is definitely not like up to date, because they count Ryo Hirakawa as part of the driver development program. He turned 30. The program, is, as listed on Wikipedia, is Hirakawa, Pato O'Ward, Gabriel Bortoleto, Ugo Ugochukwu, and Bianca Bustamante. I'm pretty sure Brandon Bauer is part of this list. He might have left already, but it doesn't even show him up as like a former member. And this is the same program that gave us, that at one point was stacked with Kevin Magnussen, Nick DeVries, Stoffel Van Dorn, Ben Barnicoat, all at once.
Well, you basically said Sodger Academy, because your current pairing is Lando Norris, who was being touted as a generational prospect when he was driving in European Formula 3, and Oscar Piastri, who you poached out of the Alpine camp because Alpine wasn't prepared to give him a job. Mm-hmm. Because they had a genuinely very good team of Fernando Alonso and Esteban Ocon at the time. And with that in mind, it kind of made the academy redundant. They were hoping, I think they were low-key hoping that Fernando Alonso was going to be washed by then, but he wasn't. He's still really goddamn good. So that kind of forced Alpine's hand. They were like, well, do we actually need Piastri? They didn't, to be fair. They already had a strong enough driver lineup. That was not the issue for the French team, who may be selling up soon, who knows.
Yeah, how many times did we watch an Alpine get drag raced down a straightaway here?
About half a dozen.
Yeah.
Dear God.
There was a lot made about very incidental contact between Gasly and Ocon that took points of downforce off one of the cars. I think it was Ocon's car that suffered the damage. It was Gasly's, all right? I'm just thinking, mm-hmm. like, man, this was really the difference between a big points haul and not. Reader, it was not the difference between a big boy. Okay,
yeah, this car is a big bag of dicks. It's the worst car in Formula One, and incredibly, it's not that close.
Like, I get it.
This is the worst factory team I can remember in F1.
And now there's rumblings going around that they may sell up again if they commit to running their power units for the next 5 years. Alpine's prepared to attempt a sale.
Which is incredible, because I feel like the first thing you'd want to ditch if you were coming in and taking their entry is the Renault power unit, which has been a perennial boat anchor for 10 years.
We don't want to shoulder the responsibility for this as a brand. Can somebody tell Michael B. Jordan to open some more wallets and get some more celebrities on board? Just ask him for a friend.
Hey, maybe not related to this, but did you hear that Andretti Global's opening up a new facility in Silverstone that'll be open in the next couple of years?
I can't wait for them to run their pair of Acura ARX06s out of that Formula One facility.
Well, endurance championship, baby. What do you mean it's not going to be Formula One?
Let's go. Andretti Global Super GT team being based out of Silverstone, England. Okay. On the subject of Honda, this was another redundant weekend for Daniel Ricciardo, the Honey Badger. His Japanese Grand Prix lasted just 20 seconds as he was collected in a Turn 3 crash with Alex Albon. No further action was deemed necessary by the stewards. But with teammate Yuki Tsunoda back in the points as the first Japanese driver to score points at his home race since 2012 when Kamui Kobayashi finished third, which was 12 years ago. Anyway, I digress. Yuki's back in the points. Daniel Ricciardo had a terrible race. Is Daniel Ricciardo in trouble in regards to his future?
Probably.
Yes.
I'll give some mitigating factors to Daniel Ricciardo's struggles. It seems like he's taking on a lot of, he's prioritizing like making sure that like the car is set up well. He's sacrificing a lot of his own personal pace for that. And also he doesn't gel well with the car. But to that point, I also want to offer a counterpoint. You weren't gelling well at the McLaren, and that's what ultimately got you sacked.
Copy and paste that exact line from the McLaren stint. And you never know. He might win one completely nonsense race as two F1 cars commit Rule 34.
Yeah.
It couldn't be a worse time, could it, for Yuki to be performing the way he is and have Sergio performing the way he is.
I was going to say, you might be able to survive one Chaos Theory. That is Yuki Tsunoda performing well, but you probably can't survive two, and that is Yuki Tsunoda and Sergio Perez both driving very well to start this season. That is a problem. Like, you could probably take one of those. You probably can't take two, because this is the issue that Ricardo's now got himself into. He's now getting a new chassis put into his car as well, likely for China, because they want to eliminate the possibility that a cracked chassis might be causing his performance problems. Yeah. But this is all coming off like a man who isn't that competitive at the moment. And don't get me wrong, I don't think he's been dreadful in comparison to Tsunoda so far this season, but you've got the worst case scenario going on above you right now. At this point, because this is around the time we started talking about contracts, so let's not forget, Sergio Perez's last deal was signed at Monaco, not far away from where we're at right now, right?
That's right.
Teams want to get their driver lineup sorted out as soon as they reasonably can afford to do so. Right. Mm-hmm. And the way Perez is going right now, he's going to get an extension because he's driven very well to start this season. Yuki Tsunoda has generally been very good so far this season in a car that turns out probably isn't as good as it looked in preseason testing.
But you know, it's not terrible either. And it gives Yuki a decent platform to achieve results. And you know what? People got to admit, ever since that blow up in Bahrain, Yuki has been the guy carrying the team of results.
Absolutely. Not
disputing
that for a
second. Maybe he is actually capable of change and improvement.
Well, and even in Bahrain, I mean, it took team orders to get him to lose that position over Ricardo, and yeah, Ricardo being on a better strategy.
Yeah.
So
which didn't work.
Which didn't end up working anyway, because neither of them got points. And shout out to the RB pit crew who were greased lightning in the pit lane, nailed a basically five-way pit lane battle, got him out ahead, and then Yuki bolted, put in a 30-lap stint on the hards,
dude,
and
he
drove away from everybody to score that point.
Can I also say too about Yuki? He was putting moves on people. Like, Gyaku Bank is not actually a bank. Gyaku is the Japanese word for reverse, but he was making big time withdrawals around the outside and setting them up going into the inside of the corner formerly known as Dunlop.
Yeah, beautifully done.
Dunlop in my heart.
A beautifully driven race. The Japanese fans gave him a very warm ovation for that performance, and rightly so. He drove incredibly well. And let's not forget the other factor. Liam Lawson is standing around in that garage every week. He's not racing in motorsport right now. He's keeping his stock as high as possible by not racing anywhere else at the minute. He's standing right there in that garage, ready to go if the opportunity drops again. Now, I don't know if Lauren Mekis is going to have the balls to make a call to drop his man mid-season, or whether it'll even be his call to make, whether it'll be Helmut Marko that kicks up a stink again and says, get rid of Daniel for Lawson again, because Lawson, we all know, his cameo last year was terrific. You know, It's proof that Lawson was ready to go. He's F1 ready. He's F1 standard, quite frankly.
By all accounts, he's been promised a seat somewhere for 25.
Where?
So Daniel Ricciardo is in the squeeze here. You know, to go up to the primary Red Bull team, he needed his two other compatriots who he's, you know, fighting for that seat for. Not that Yuki's really in contention for that seat. We all know that. Yuki's beating him. And Perez is doing everything he needs to retain his seat. It's, you know, whether you take the words of Red Bull at face value, Horner has said that it's Perez's seat to lose.
This is Daniel Ricciardo's 14th partial or full season in Formula One. He's been around a while. That sucks that might turn out sad like him. Like, I like Daniel Ricciardo. Not as much as some people like Daniel Ricciardo, but I like Daniel Ricciardo. As Pete, he's a very fun driver, but this has just been a tough last few years of his run where it didn't work at McLaren, and now it seems like, I don't know. I would certainly hope that the chassis change picks his form up, because, hey, Racing Bulls still has a Constructors' Championship that they'd like to finish as high up the order possible. And the reality is they're not going to do it with just one driver bringing home the points.
But that point that they scored, given the state of the field, any cushion they can build over Haas is going to be huge.
Yeah. So far this season, it looks like those are the two main contenders for P6 in the standings right now. That's the impression that I get.
Well, it ain't going to be Williams at this rate.
It's not. Like, dude, if we weren't talking about Daniel Ricciardo, we would have be talking about Williams having another horror show weekend.
Oof. More damaged chassis, wrecks for Logan Sargeant in practice, a wreck for Alex Albon, which was arguably not his fault. At worst, a racing incident in Japan. And that chassis has been sent back to London for more repairs for China next weekend. Williams having another horror show of a weekend. Like Cam summed it up best. There was a 5-car pit stop battle with 5 cars in on the same lap. And that ended up being the inevitable fight for 10th. But the way the race shook out. And that was for 1 point. And
Good news, Dre. Sauber got one pit stop in.
Yay!
Under 30 seconds.
Woo! Let's go. Hashtag lightweight
nuts. The bad
news.
The pit stop was so bad that it probably lost Bottas a chance at a point.
He finished 14th in a day that Zhou Guanyu retired, and Zhou Guanyu is low-key having not the season you want to have for somebody who is at risk of losing his place in the sport.
Sauber reek. They are. I have never seen a team this consistently bad in pit stops in F1.
But that's the thing. I don't think their car is slow. I think it's up there with Haas and RB on raw speed alone, but they've been so bad in the pits that it's potentially cost them chances at multiple points by now.
It's all about those lightweight nuts, man. So, as far as the midfield battle goes, it seems like it's RB versus Haas at the moment until Sauber finally gets a hang of what's been causing them to have these slow pit stops, which are supposed to make them quicker, but for the moment, it's making them much, much worse.
Yeah,
Haas looks better than anybody would have ever given hope for at this stage. The first upgrade package is coming. The real test begins here.
Dear. That's not even the problem.
God. My mind just keeps going back. I mean, Alpine upgraded their car this weekend. When I see it, I'll let them know.
That like an upgraded car to you?
It was different. It wasn't very fast.
Yeah, that kind of about sums it up, really. And that summed up most of this race, to be honest with you. It was a decent tactical showing. Not exactly going to set anybody's world on fire. If you like a good tactical showdown for third, then tune in. No, it was a good race. But don't get me wrong, I'm a sucker for those kind of races, personally. I do quite like those kind of Grand Prix every once in a while. But yeah. For the people that want blood and entertainment at the front, you're not getting it here. I'm sorry. And hey, that might be the case for you next weekend as well, because we'll be talking about MotoGP at the Circuit of the Americas and the million-dollar question. Is Marc Marquez truly back? We'll find out on that GP23 at COTA. But most importantly, Cam, we've got baggers this weekend.
We've got motherfucking baggers.
For
free! You know where we got them? We got them for free.
$3.99. You can. I'm going to plug it because the baggers are incredibly fun. If you have not watched them, go out of your way to see them. They are showing the baggers races for free on MotoGP's YouTube channel live over the weekend.
Great. What are the baggers?
Cam can explain because he knows his bikes even better than I do. So it's best it comes from him.
Yeah, because there's one sitting about 15 feet from me in our garage. Well, you know all of these stereotypical Harley Davidson and Indian, you know, dressed up luxury cruising bikes that are really designed for everything but performance and more for just eating
cosplay
up miles.
Cosplay for dads.
Get your South Park jokes in now. Loud pipes save lives, etc. Well, think those, but rebuilt into pure racing machines. They are nonsense.
And as I understand it,
the equivalent of taking like a late 70s Cadillac Eldorado and turning it into a track day car.
And correct me if I'm wrong, like, don't they have like dudes riding these bikes, like actual name brand dudes you recognize if you really know your superbike race?
Jeremy McWilliams.
Jeremy McWilliams is still here, and I believe he's 60 this year.
Okay, this that absolutely fits for these kind of bikes.
Yeah, Jeremy so you'll have your Harley Davidson.
You might remember he was in MotoGP in 2004. Like, which is just wild. Jeremy McWilliams is still here. James Rispoli from our Bike Live days, you may remember, is also still here. He's now racing for the King of the Baggers over there now, and still one of the most likable and popular dudes in all of bike racing. Our unofficial mascot of our Bike Live days, James Rispoli, is also over there as well. But do check it out. The baggers are very, very fun. Like I said, it's for free. MotoGP's YouTube channel will share all of that, as well as all our usual coverage. We'll talk about that. And, of course, the MotoGP Grand Prix of the Americas this weekend. Will it be another GP24 at the front? Will it be Marc Marquez? Will it be Alex Rins? Probably not. He's on a Yamaha. But, hey, we've been surprised before. just throwing that one out there. He does like COTA. He always has liked COTA. He's won it three times. He's the only other guy besides Marc Marquez who's won at COTA more than once.
Which
across
is
the classes.
Why? Well, yeah, because the problem is that Marc Marquez, when he's healthy, is usually the other guy winning at COTA.
Yeah, precisely. Also, RJ, tell us a little more about something special we got cooked up for next week as well.
Well, first, I got to ask, like, April 1st has already passed, and we were promised like an April Fool's episode, and like we didn't deliver on that. And oh, well, we got something in the works. You know, as they say in motorsport, safety third.
Safety can be third, fourth, hell, it can even be fifth.
Check back next week, where we dig up our long-awaited, like, April Fool's gag bit, which might actually turn into, like, a seriously invested passion project sometime down the road. But what I will say is this is tapping into some of our other interests outside of motor racing, but it is a motor racing episode, and it also deals with my special interests. Things will be a little bit different, but, you know, maybe you'll like it. You'll just have to wait and listen.
The terrifying thing is me giving RJ O'Connell the podcast keys again. That's going to be fun. And I'll be sitting back listening in, so that'll make for a fun change. But, yeah, that would be my problem, shall we say, for next week. So until then, we'll have two episodes coming up next week. That and, of course, MotoGP at the Circuit of the Americas. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley. We'll see you next week on Motorsport 101. Thank you very much for listening. And sayonara.
Oyasumina sai.
But if you think about it, the F1 field doesn't have it that bad. I mean, they could be getting bullied by Rick Hendrick.
On his 40th anniversary, no less.